So I don't know about you, but I love the month of September. You know, after a long, rainy August, the children finally go back to school and a new term begins. And normally, the sun comes out, which it has today, but it's probably the first time, apart from yesterday, that it's appeared. It's an exciting month for me. I don't know about you. There's a sense of anticipation. And for many people, especially for young people and children, there's often the start of a new journey, a new time, a new school, a new class. It's a new time for people, and it's a new time here at Cottenham Baptist Church as well. And thinking about September and the summer and new times reminds me of one of the first times that Simon and I went on holiday together after we'd been married. And we thought we would make it a little adventure. So we decided what we'd do is we'd go to the south of France and we'd travel down in the car, just the two of us, and we'd stop partway down in a little village called Villefranche, which looked very nice, and we'd arranged it all, and we thought, oh, we'll have a lovely meal there, and then we'll carry on to the south coast, and we'll have 2 weeks in the sunshine. And we were very excited, and Simon especially was very excited, because he likes to plan the holidays. I just, you know, go along, but he likes to plan them, and he got it all sorted. And there was much anticipation. So we set off in the car, and it was quite a long journey to the centre of France, to Villefranche, and we arrived quite late, and we were very tired. But we thought, no worries, we'll travel to our hotel, and we'll put our stuff in the hotel, and we'll go out for a nice meal. So we travelled through the lovely village, out into the industrial estate, to our hotel. But we thought, never mind, you know, it's only one night, so we put the bags in the room, and we said, we'll go to a nice little French restaurant. We'll walk there, because it's warm and the air's lovely. So we went out of our hotel and we started walking down the industrial estate. And we came to what looked like another hotel, and next to it was what looked like a campsite. And as we were approaching this hotel, someone ran out of the hotel and threw something into the campsite, which promptly exploded. And we thought, oh, well, we'll just go in the car, shall we, to the restaurant. So we went back and we got the car because we felt a little bit unsafe, but it's fine. It was fine. We're in France. It's okay. And we got in the car and we started driving. And as we got back towards this hotel, police arrived, screeching sirens, and one of them got out with a gun. And we thought, oh, okay, we won't travel into the nice village. We'll just turn left and go wherever it takes us to find somewhere to eat. So we turn left, away from the lovely village, and we found a McDonald's. And we thought, oh, no worries, you know, we're just hungry. Let's just have a McDonald's and then sleep and then carry on. So we went into McDonald's, and at that stage, this was quite a few years ago, we didn't know a lot of French, and we thought, well, it's easy, isn't it? It's McDonald's. So we ordered two meal deals, and she said something to us, the lady, in French. And we were like, pardon? And she repeated, and we were like, oh, pardon? Waving of hands. And she repeated it again, and we went, oh no, it's not pardon. Comment? That's better French, isn't it? And she repeated it again. And we just were standing and looking at each other, confused, and she kept repeating. And then she was obviously getting very frustrated, and suddenly she put her hand down on the counter, and she said in plain English, as clear as day, look, you've ordered two meal deals. Now, what do you want to drink? Coke, coffee, or tea? Do you know, and I just stood there and I thought, after the bombs and the guns and now the shouting, I could just give up on the holiday. I could just have gone back to England. It wasn't what I expected at all. It wasn't what I'd anticipated. All the excitement and anticipation and expectation of our holiday had quite simply been blown apart there and then. And you know, in a strange way, when I read Luke chapter 4 and I see the Jews listening to Jesus in the synagogue after he had been away and come back, I have the same kind of thoughts. I feel they may have been having a similar experience as I did. Because you see, here was Jesus, and he was this person who had grown up in Nazareth, in this place. He was this person who these people thought they knew fairly well. He was this person who used to sit in the synagogue each week listening to the teachings with them. He was this boy. watched grow into a man. And here he was in this passage, back among them after being away. And he wasn't just back for a quick visit, you know, to see his parents and say hello. It seemed he was back with a purpose. And not only that, he was back amid rumours, you know, strange rumours. Rumours of a baptism that had taken place that had been a little bit odd. Rumours of a trip into the wilderness that he'd gone on. Rumours of some miraculous healings that had taken place. Rumours of amazing teaching that he'd been giving in Capernaum. Strange rumours that indicated that Jesus actually wasn't the same as the boy who had grown up among them. He was a different man. And so you can imagine, can't you, that as Jesus sits in the synagogue in Nazareth on that Sabbath, as was his custom, that the place was buzzing. You know, the people must have been falling over themselves with excitement and anticipation. What was this new Jesus going to be like? How different was he? Were these rumours true that had been going around? How would he act? What would he say if he said anything at all? Was he really the one that people in Capernaum had been talking about? There would have been a buzz, there would have been an excitement, there would have been some form of anticipation. This was a new time that was happening. And then, amid all the excitement and anticipation, Jesus is handed the scroll of the prophet Isaiah. And he stands in front of all those people who had known him as a boy, and he begins to read. "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." Amid all the excitement and anticipation, Jesus stands in the synagogue, the heart of the Jewish community, and he reads one of the most exciting passages of Jewish history. Now, whether that was a set reading for the day, or whether Jesus specifically chose it, we don't know. But what we do know is that when Jesus stood up to read that specific passage, the expectation in the room would only have grown even higher. Because, you see, this was the passage that the Jews were so familiar with. This was the passage that they had heard read over and over and over again. And what's more, this was the passage that the Jews loved. They loved this passage because this was the passage that showed them their future. This was the part of the scripture that pointed them to what they had been waiting for. This was the passage that painted the future that they longed for as a people. A future full of hope, a future full of freedom, a future full of liberation, a future full of release and deliverance and rescue. It was a wonderful future. And what's more, it was a future that was going to be ushered in by the one pictured in the passage, the one the Jews had fixed their eyes on since the prophets had departed years and years and years ago. The one who would come in power and might. The one who would ride in glory, the one who would all around would fear, the one who would finally sweep aside the Roman Empire that oppressed them so much and raise up the Jews to be the people that God intended them to be. The one the Spirit of the Lord would be upon. The long-awaited, victorious Messiah. The Jews loved this passage. They loved this passage. This was their future. And so when Jesus stands up and finishes this wonderful reading before them and then rolls up the scroll and gives it back to the attendant and sits down, you can imagine the anticipation. You can imagine the excitement. You can imagine the expectation. Because if rumor was true and Jesus was so different, what on earth was he going to say next? Well, as Jesus sat there with the eyes of everyone fixed upon him, he started by saying, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." Or if you like, as heard through Jewish ears, "Today, this scripture
is fulfilled in me.
What? What,
Jesus? The Messiah?
What,
no.
What, Mary and Joseph's son?
No.
What's he talking about?
What's he going on about? And then Jesus continues. As the people are puzzled and quizzical and not really understanding what he's saying, Jesus starts to expand. And he starts to talk about Elijah and Elisha, great prophets of old. You know, men who the Jews revered, men who the Jews looked up to, men of God doing God's work among God's people. And he picks out a couple of interesting stories. Stories of Elijah and Elisha offering to help those outside of Israel, outside of the Jewish community. And then people listening suddenly start to get it. And their eyes open and their posture changes. Because in effect, what Jesus is saying is, yes, you're right, the Messiah has come. Yes, the long-awaited one is here. And yes, he has come in power. He has come in authority. He has come to bring freedom. He has come to bring recovery of sight. He has come to fulfill wonderful prophecy. He has come to bring the long-awaited good news which you've been desperate to hear. But he has not come to do it by crushing your enemy and raising you up. Instead, just as Elijah and Elisha went outside of Israel, so the Messiah has come to do the same. He has come to show mercy to all people. He has come to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour to everyone, Romans and Jews. Well, the Jews in Nazareth must have been crushed, mustn't they? Their anticipation, their excitement, their expectation must have literally been blown apart. They were furious. They were furious, absolutely furious. I mean, hold on. This was their God. This was their God. This was the one they had been waiting for. This was the one that they had been longing for. This was the one that they worshipped. And here he was, proclaiming that he'd come to rescue the wrong people. What was going on? This isn't what they'd been told. This isn't what the scripture taught. This isn't what they expected. This isn't how the prophecy was supposed to turn out. This isn't right. How dare Jesus do this? How dare he says, how dare he make God out to be so gracious? How dare he make him out to be so gracious? And so, you know, I guess in an attempt to make things right, you know, an attempt to protect the community they knew, in an attempt to keep the good news of God to those who deserved it, in an attempt to keep control, the people in Nazareth took Jesus, the Messiah, the anointed one, and they tried to get rid of him. They tried to throw him off a cliff. People who professed to follow God, people who lived in the community of God, people who followed the laws of God, people who knew the character of God, attempted to kill him so that they could smother his grace before others could encounter it. Now, on one level, we look at this and think, that's awful. That's awful that those people should do that. But on another level, it's scarily familiar. It's scarily familiar today, I think. Do you know, there's a story that Philip Yancey, a famous Christian writer, writes in his book called What's So Amazing About Grace. If you haven't read it, I recommend you read it. It's a brilliant book. And he starts off with this story that he heard from his friend who worked in Chicago among the down and outs, as they called them, on the streets. And his friend said that one day he had a lady come to him. And this lady was a prostitute. She was working as a prostitute. And she had a little 2-year-old girl. And she came to him and she started to pour her heart out to him. And she was distraught. She was distressed and she was weeping. And she could hardly get her words out. But as she started to bumble through her story, he started to realise the horror of what was going on. Because this woman came to him and she said she'd been a prostitute for years because she couldn't live, she couldn't survive, she couldn't eat. And she needed to find work, so that's the work she did. And then she'd had her little daughter and she found it become harder and harder and harder to eat and live and feed her daughter. So what she decided to do was to sell her daughter into prostitution to raise money, because she could get more money by selling her daughter than by selling herself. And as this person listened to this story, he was horrified. And he didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to do because, first of all, he'd have to tell the authorities what was going on, and he didn't know how to tell her that. And he didn't know what to do because he just didn't know where to start. So he looked at this woman, and in desperation, he said, well, there's a church down the road. Why don't you go to the church? Maybe they can help you. And this woman, who had been crying and in a complete state, suddenly sat up straight. And she looked horrified, and she spat out the words, church? Church? Why would I go there? I already feel bad enough about myself as it is. They'll only make me feel worse if I go there. You know, when you read that story, it's awful. It's awful in so many ways. But the thing is that when Jesus was on earth, this woman and others like her would have been the type of people who would have run to him for help. This woman and others like her would have been the type of people who would have been attracted to Jesus. They would have been the type of people who would have wanted to meet Jesus. The type of people who would have asked for his help. And this woman and others like her would have been the type of people that Jesus would have welcomed. You only have to take a glimpse of the Bible to realise that. I mean, there are so many examples. To take a few, there's the hated tax collector who no one liked and Jesus invited to dinner. There's the unclean woman who no one would go near and Jesus reached out and called her daughter. There's the adulterous lady who everyone judged because that's what you did and Jesus refused to judge her. There's the unheard beggar who shouted out day after day after day and Jesus turned round and heard them. There's the dirty thief on the cross who was tried and convicted by everyone and yet Jesus forgave. There are so many examples in the Bible of people who Jesus welcomed to come to him. People who simply didn't deserve it. People who were outside of the established church. And the thing that makes it even crazier is that when they came to Jesus, he welcomed them without question. You know, he wasn't distracted by the fact that their lives were actually quite offensive sometimes, and he wasn't distracted by the fact that they'd often hurt other people in the process, and he wasn't distracted by the fact that they'd made a huge mess of the life they'd been given. He didn't even care that they knew nothing about him. He wasn't distracted by the wrong they did or the problems they had or the things that had been done to them. He was just so pleased to see them and to welcome them and to love them without question. This is the overwhelming picture of Jesus that we have in the Bible. It's overwhelming. And yet, this is not the overwhelming picture that the world has of the church today. And I find that very sad. I also find it very wrong. And you know, maybe, like the Jews in Nazareth, maybe it's because we as the church think that we've got good reasons for this. You know, maybe we think it's because actually, things need to be right. Things need to be just and things need to be clear. Maybe it's because we think that our church community needs to be safe so we protect it from certain people. Maybe it's because we think that actually good news is worth searching for, so if people want to find it, they will search it out. Or maybe we think we can't just accept anyone in church because, well, that would be a disaster, wouldn't it? Anything could happen. Maybe it's because on some level, We want to keep control in a society that has clearly lost control. Maybe there are lots of good reasons why there is this difference between how people see church and how people see Jesus. But the thing is, as long as we hold on to these reasons, we actually get nowhere as a church. In fact, ultimately, all we end up doing is smothering the grace of God before anyone else can see it, really. Do you know, there's this little story which another person I really like reading tells, and it's a person called Mike Iaconelli. He was a youth worker in America, and he died a few years ago. But he was a wonderful man, and he wrote a couple of great books. And he tells this story about how he went to his friend one day who had a little daughter, and he said, "Could you get your daughter to colour in a picture for me? Just any picture to colour it in." And they went, "Oh, yes, she'd love to do that." And so he waited for a little while, and then just before the service started on a Sunday, this little girl came running up to him, really excited, with this picture in her hand. She's like, "Mike, Mike!" And she thrust it into his hand and said, "I've done a picture for you." And he looked at it, and it was a bit like this. I've got it on the acetate. Let me just do this. Come down. Brilliant. Great. It's a bit like this. And he got it from her, and he says, "I took it from her, and I did what any adult would do. I lied. I said, 'Oh, that is beautiful, Anna. That is a wonderful picture. Oh, how lovely. You must have put so much time into that. Thank you so much.'" He said, "But what I really wanted to say was, black crayon, is that the only colour you can use? There's green and red and yellow and orange. There's many colours. Black. Do you find that inspiring?" He said, "What I really wanted to say was, did you see the lines? Did you even try to colour within them? Did you even notice them? What's the point of them being there?" He said, "What I really wanted to say was, Anna, that is rubbish. That is just nowhere near good. Take it away and try again. Get it right." But of course he didn't. Because it wouldn't be right to say those things to that girl. Because it would have missed the point. The point was, she'd done this picture for him and she was delighted that he wanted it. And you know, that's the message of the passage in Isaiah. That's the problem the Jews in Nazareth had with Jesus. That's the grace of God. It's grace. It does not feel it has to point out the things that aren't right. It does not feel it has to put stipulations on the lives people offer to Jesus. It does not feel it has to demand change before it will accept. It's grace. It's real grace. It's real proper good news. Because the truth is that grace is not what we want it to be. It's not always fair. It's not always controllable. It's not really very safe if you think about it. But it is good news for everyone. And it is of God. And as his people, surely we need to follow him in this. So, as I stand here and preach my first sermon as minister of Cottenham Baptist Church, I probably need to finish. But I want to urge us, let us as a church try and change the face of the church in 2008 and onwards. Let's try and turn the tide. Let's be a people who are known purely and simply because they encompass and embody the grace of God. Because then, you know, I am sure that the good news of Jesus will be good news for everyone. And that the year of the Lord's favour will truly be able to be established.